Okay, so what we have is this. Obviously, we're going to be observing, good word, observing the 9 days now and observing Tisha B'Av, the tragic day on the Jewish calendar. And the Chazal tell us many days, many sad events over the course of history that occurred on this day. So the odds of two Bate Mikdashim destroyed on the same day, as a math guy, is one out of 365, probably, because the first one's a given day. That doesn't count. As a what do you call it? That doesn't count for the number, but the second one reaching the same exact day, that becomes something of a numbers game. So we have sit on the thing, like Akiva was sitting on it before. You sit on the thing itself. So we have like this: the day, the ninth of Av, the Mishnah reads many different bad things that happened. The most famous of is that the two Beis Hamikdashes were destroyed on the same calendar date of the year. 400 something years later, but the same date, almost 500 years later, but the same date itself. And we know that's not a coincidence. Many of the tragic days in Jewish history can be directly related to this day coming up on the Hebrew calendar of Nine Av. Some of the more classic ones not mentioned in the Mishnah, because if you say the Mishnah, you're going back 1500 years telling us about the Beis HaMikdash 2000 years ago, the Beis HaMikdash 2500 years ago. We're talking even more recent events, 500 years ago. Spanish Inquisition happened on Nine Av. World War I began on 9/11. Possibly the final decisions, depends on who you, which, you know, which things you're reading, for 9/11 was on 9/11. So 9/11 is a very bad day. But we live in a world today of conspiracy theories. Not that we should be following down those rabbit holes, but we live in a world of conspiracy theories. So we have multiple ways. The simplest way, so the basic approach that people do is they tell you, let's find out why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Why was the temple destroyed? So what rabbis tell us is this: any generation, any year that the temple, the Beis HaMikdash, is not rebuilt, it's as if it was destroyed. It's an active destruction every year, which means that all the rabbis try to tell us is if you could find out the mistake that was done that made it get destroyed and you rectify that mistake, then it gets rebuilt. It's very simple. As it's destroyed, we have the option to rebuild it. It's in our hands, all of us, to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, not with our hands to rebuild it. That God will help us out, but to rectify the transgressions that were done 2,000 years ago. So the rabbis are going to tell you that, let's say, the second temple was destroyed because there was baseless hatred. As soon as we fix that up and there'll be unity among all Jews, Beis HaMikdash gets rebuilt. Anything that was fixing the mistake starts the process over. But as we said a minute ago, we live in a world of conspiracies, and there's multiple ways to define what is the moment of destruction. What's the reason for the destruction? So instead of going back to the second Beis HaMikdash, why was it destroyed? You could fix that mistake. You can go back to the first Beis HaMikdash and decide why that was destroyed. In the second Beis HaMikdash, 40 years before it was destroyed, certain miracles ceased to happen. There were daily miracles in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple that stopped 40 years before. We discussed it in the past. So you can go back to say what was wrong then and try to fix that. But we're going to go back further tonight. We're going to go back to the story of when the nine Av became on our map. Not the first time in the Torah, but one of the earlier times. The time that directly connects to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And when is that? The story of the spies. So let's go through basic Jewish history. The Jews left Egypt, Eliezer, what day of the year? Calendar date? Stop it. Passover. The Jews left Egypt on Pesach. Right? Well, okay, you're right. Pesach is when they left Egypt. 7 days later, splitting of the sea. 42 days after that, Sinai Revelation. Then there's a series of the seconds, 49 from the first, 42 from the second, the 41. Then there's a series, 40 days after that, Moses went up to the heaven, came back down, the golden calf. Then there's 40 days of Moses praying, 40 days again, and now we're at Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur of year 6 months into the desert, God says, I forgive you for the golden calf. Okay, we're at Yom Kippur time, year half a year into this game, right? Then God says, stop building the Mishkan. And they start building the Mishkan, and that goes from around right after Yom Kippur. They collect the money, it takes a few days. Before Sukkot, they already have the money. Then they start building it. They build it, they're done by Hanukkah. God says, take it down, we're not ready yet. They take it down, they wait till Nisan of now year two. We're almost one full year in the desert now. Pesach is when Nisan is, but Pesach is the middle of the month. Now, beginning of the month, in the desert, God approaches the Jews and says, listen, prepare for the carbon Pesach sacrifice. And as we spoke about, RabbiHavda.com, run well by Haskell, is that was the only year potentially in the desert that they brought a carbon Pesach. So we're 1 year later, we're at Korban Pesach. Okay. How long now is the plan to be in the desert for? A couple more months. We're planning on getting into Israel right now. We're traveling in the desert. That wasn't the long-term strategy. Long-term strategy was to get into Israel. But before they went into Israel, they said, let's send out some spies. And that happens Pesach of year two, Shavuos, right after Shavuos. A couple weeks after Shavuos in the calendar year, a year after Sinai, let's send out the spies. The spies go, Parsha Shalach, open words of the Torah, takes them 40 days. 40 days, which was a miraculous speed. No cars and bullet trains back then. They had to travel, and they went through the whole Israel in 40 days. And God said that was a blessing. I wanted it to go quickly because he knew the results. And what happens? The spies come back, negative report, and the Jews say, we're going to trust the spies. How many spies went? 12. How many said good? 2. Bad? 10. Jews went with the majority. They followed the 10 bad, and they started saying, Israel's the worst. We don't want to go there. All the negative stuff, and they start crying, and God makes the proclamation. You cried for nothing, because I was going to protect you going into Israel right now. You cried for nothing. This will be, to quote a former president of the United States, a day that shall live in infamy. 9 Av became a day that shall live in infamy. You'll be crying on that date from here on forward. So 800 years later, there's one temple being destroyed. 500 years after that, another temple is being destroyed. It all started on the 9 Av of when the spies came back, gave the negative report, and the Jews believed it. So we're going to go with a suggestion tonight. Instead of trying to make peace among the Jews, a strategy that has not been, we'll stop there, we'll come up with a different strategy. Let's find out what the mistake of the spies were, and the Jews listening to the spies, fix that mistake, and we're going back to the original sin, if I may borrow another phrase, go back all the way back to the original mistake, fix that mistake, and guess what happens? We'll be celebrating in Jerusalem in 3 days from now. Amen. So now what happened with the spies? Fascinating story with the spies. The spies were chosen. There were 600,000 plus men among the Jews. 600,000 plus men. They said, okay, we're going to send in some people. They're called, Rashi refers to them, the phrase in the Torah says, Anashim, they were Roshe of tribes, the head of the tribes. They're called Tzadikim, righteous people. Moshe Rabbeinu is not choosing bad people. He's choosing 12 representatives. By the way, two of them, Yeshua ben Nun, Kalei ben Yefune, which we discussed a few weeks ago, who made it into Israel. We just had a long speech about that 5 weeks ago, right? Those two were superstars. The other 10, when they were chosen, were called tzaddikim, superstars. First class ballot Hall of Fame is this moment. Now what happens in the story? Chumash, open Chumash. They start traveling. They tell Moshe Rabbeinu, thanks for being chosen. We're going to go do our job. And they leave. And then it says they started going to Israel. First thing that happens when they come to Israel, mass death. Death all around them. Major funerals happening. It's all brought down the Chumash and Rashi. Why was it major funerals? God had a plan for the Jews for good. He said, listen, I want to keep the non-Jews preoccupied because if they're going to notice someone leaving the camp with the binoculars, they say, wait a second, who are those 10 people left the camp? That's not good. So God said, let me keep them preoccupied so no one's going to notice the spies are around. A diversion, a tactic that we've done till today. And he had mass deaths. And the spies are coming in and they're like, whoa, this place is not healthy. Mass death. Instead of looking at it as a blessing from God, they looked at it as, oh, this isn't good. Mass deaths. Then they came across, we discussed many times, the unusually large fruit. They held a fig, cluster of grapes, took 4 people. We could hold, I don't know, 50 cluster of grapes. Depends how tall you are, how strong you are. They needed 4 people, open chumash, to carry huge, huge fruits. Then they started noticing the people. They heard the people saying in Israel, there are gnats, grasshoppers, bugs among us. Because the giants living in Israel at the time were looking at the Jews as gnats and bugs. They said, they looked at us like this. Terrible, terrible event. All of these things are making the 10 out of 12 spies saying, you know what? To quote another one, no mas, no mas. This is not a wise idea. And they say, you know what? We're going to come back into the camp and we're going to tell the Jews that there were grapes that need 4 people to carry it. And you know what the Jews are going to say? You mean mushrooms you've been taking. Play on words, right? You've been shrooming it. Because there ain't no thing as 4 people carrying a cluster of grapes. So he said, listen, we can't look like crazy people. You know what we're going to do? We're going to take this stuff with us back into the camp. BabaHavda.com, a couple years ago, we discussed if you're allowed to take foods out of Israel. And they go back to the camp and they show it. They said, guys, you know how big their beds are? You know how big these people are? They're going to squash us. By the way, even if they weren't that big, the atmosphere is global warming. People are dying all over the place. It must be bad here in the place. This isn't good. Weird fruits, giants who are looking at us like gnats. So now, they came back. 10 out of 12 give a terrible report. Terrible report. And the Jews go with 10 out of 12. And they start crying. And God said, you cried for nothing? Doesn't sound like nothing to me. You cried for nothing? You know what's going to happen now? This day, a day of infamy forever and ever. So now the question becomes, the spies started out as great. By the way, they are already later on referred to as evil, Rishoyim. They went from Tzadikim to Rishoyim in these 40 days. Moshe Rabbeinu chose 10, 12, but 10, two remained, 10 awesome people at Tzadikim, and within 40 days, they became evil people that destroyed the Jewish history, alternate history. Had they not come back and not gave a derogatory report to Israel, 10 out of 12, we would have entered Israel right then. It would be a whole different universe. But instead, we were stuck in the desert for another 40 years. We said earlier why they traveled, speed travel in 40 days. Because God said, for every day you traveled and came back with a bad report, you stay in the desert a year. So God sped up the travel on purpose to help them out. Because if you would have had them travel normal time, it would take 200 days. Then they'd be stuck in the desert for 200 years. So God said, I have a great idea. I'm going to make it last for less. But we have to figure out now, how did the spies go from good, tzaddikim, to evil? And maybe when we figure out that mistake, we figure if we have that mistake, and we fix it up. Yes?
Isn't this tzaddikim supposed to be like an all-righteous person? So like, how can you classify that if they...
The Torah calls them, and the Torah is not, the Torah doesn't make up stories. The Torah says at one point they were righteous. It's a scary thing for all of us. You can reach the pinnacle of society, but you're still being tested. The great ones are being tested. We look at the great ones and say they have no evil inclination. They have a huge evil inclination. They're just winning constantly. We're not always winning. They are. So what went from good to bad? So the Ramban, Nachmanides, this is an obvious question. Obvious question. What went from good to bad? I'm going to tell you worse. At what point did they become bad? They left. They got chosen. They were good. 40 days later, they were bad. Somewhere in this line, something happened. And I gave you many options right now. Day, I'm making up a number right now. Day 7, they saw mass death. Okay, that would be day 7, they got turned off. Maybe. Funerals. Maybe, I make up numbers. Day 14, they got to see the fruits, the size of houses. I'm like, oh, this ain't good. Day 14, maybe they went off. I don't know. Day 21, I'm making up numbers here, is when they started hearing people calling them gnats. We got a bug problem, call the exterminator. Maybe day, at what point did they become bad? Unbelievable, Rashi. When the Torah describes the spies going around, the Torah describes everything I just said. They left, they went south, then they made a turn upward north, then they made a turn westward, describing all the details. They saw the deaths, they saw the fruit, they came down. And then the Torah says, at the end of this whole description, the Torah says, they left and they returned. So Rashi, Chazal asked, what do you mean they left and they returned? That left is supposed to be 9 verses earlier. Before you talk about them making this great circle, they left, they made a great circle, death, big fruits, gnats, bugs, funerals, the whole thing, and you come back down. It doesn't say it. What the Torah says is, the whole events, over 40 days, and then says, by the way, they left and they came back. Rashi says, what is that phrase? They left, they came back. That's not true. They left, they went through 40 days, then they came back. Don't put they left and they came back together. So Rashi says, to teach us that they came back evil, they left evil. They left as they came back and left under the same circumstance. So Rashi says, instead of looking at it as at what point in time did they become bad? You know when they became bad? At the beginning. Even crazier. They were chosen as great people and they became bad right away. So what? That's the question. What corrupted them? Not the dead bodies, not the large fruits, not the exterminator being called. That's all before they left. So at what point? So the Ramban says, their ego, that they looked around and said, 600,000 people here, and guess who got numero uno being chosen to come? Wow. So at that moment, they became bad. The choosing itself, the moment they were chosen, is how they failed. Yeah. Yeshua, it says, humble person. Caleb, it says, was thinking of his parents. So these people remained humble, but these 10 became arrogant people. Now they're on, we go further. So they became arrogant, therefore what? Therefore what they do wrong. That won't be a lesson to us. So the truth is we could stop right here and say the lesson for all of us is don't be arrogant. Okay, but there's a problem here. Because if someone comes over to me and tells me, I can't play ball, I'm not attractive, I have limited resources and brains, my family is terrible, and goes through a whole list of negative stuff about themselves, and they're not lying. They say, oh, but I want to tell you one good quality I have. I'm humble. You're not humble. It's reality, buddy. So a lot of us in this room, not all of us, we don't have the option to be chosen out of 600,000. I'm going to remain humble because we're not being chosen out of 600,000. So what practically the despised do wrong? This is one approach. The approach we're going to take for ourselves. The approach is this, as you heard. The spies were told, go to the land and figure out what is the best way to invade. How should we do it? Should we go through the south, through the east? What cities are look weakened? What cities look potential to be taken over? That's what we are told to do. Figure out the best method possible. Now, there's two types of generals in the army, more than two. Stephen Zondi once spoke about this. Different types of generals. There's a general that's a logistics guy. He's got to make sure the supply lines are working. He's got to make sure the food is going to get there. The oil is going to get there to the front lines. If the front line is moving quicker, then I got to make sure the supply lines move faster. That's a specific type of general. Then there's a general that decides, he's an actuary general. Okay, what's good, what's bad? If we're going to attack from this side, then those guys' troops are moving there. That's not the same guy as the, what do you call it, as the supply line guy. The supply line guy is like the second guy. After general number one decides, should we attack from the east? Should we attack from the west? No, this is a bad idea. I see arms moving this way. We're planning Normandy. Let's put out a fake thing. That's general number one. Once we decide what we're doing, then general number two steps in. It's different jobs. And there's multiple other types of generals. They were hired as spies, Chumash says, to go find out what is the best place to attack. Says, find out what merits they have. Find out where their weak points are. They came back, what they do? They didn't come back with that information. They came back and they said, we don't think we should be going in. We don't think this is a proper move. We think that they're greater than us. We think that they're stronger than us. We think they're going to beat God. They changed it from what, Akiva? From a how should we do this to whether or if we should do it. That's the difference. They went from a how to an if. They decided, wait, if I'm in control here, what are we doing here? Rabbi Kaplan, the great tzaddik, the genius Rabbi Kaplan, wrote a book. I think the name is, did you get it? If I Were God. It's amazing, right?
Internet. Yeah.
And the point of the book, I don't remember it recently, I haven't looked at it in a long time, maybe you'll lend it to me next time. The point of the book is, if you were in God, what would you do? And everyone has a lot of ideas. And his proof is, you come out to exactly what it is. In the end, this world is perfect. So if you were in charge, you're doing the same thing. You think if you had inside knowledge, you would give yourself an extra 3 inches and an extra $1 billion and a bit. No. You do ex if you knew the whole game, you're doing the same thing. But the difference is we're not God, but we play it in the wrong way, and we start doing all the ifs. Should I do this? If I should do this? If I shouldn't do this? They left the situation of going from how should we react to the situation we're in? How should I be the best version of myself to should I be in this position? That change made them from tzaddikim to rishayim. All of us, excellent. All of us have the same situation. Because we are all in a situation we're in. And we have to decide our job is how we're going to react to that situation. Our job is not to say, if only I wasn't in this situation. If I was given an extra money, if I didn't live in that neighborhood, if I didn't have that rabbi, we go around all day doing the same mistake the spies did. Instead of saying, my job right now is, what do I do right now? Forget everything else, what do I do right now? Their job they make is, should I be in this position? The whole idea of America, recently, 24 hours a day, talk radio, nonstop. What do they do with each other and this stuff? If you were head of the Yankees, what would you make this trade? If you were president of the United States, or if you were prime minister, every guy in Israel right now has more than one opinion what Netanyahu should do. We're not getting involved in politics. Every guy in America, depends if you're wearing red hats or blue hats, has a lot of opinions what Donald Trump should do. And if I were Donald Trump, that's not your job. You know what your job is? Whatever your job is, everyone has their own job. Donald Trump's job is Donald Trump's job. But you're busy about his job if I was him. Our job is to serve God. And the way to serve God is, what right now am I supposed to do? The reaction to what I'm supposed to do. How should I react? We discussed in this class many times. Many times. The greatest test to Avraham Avinu. He was given 10 tests. The final test was what? God tells him, slaughter your son. After God told him, this guy is taking over the world. You took 99 years to get finally have your wife expecting. 100 years old, your kid's born. He's going to the future of the world. And then a few years later, oh, by the way, slaughter him. He's not married with kids yet. He gets slaughtered. Everything I was told until now was out the window. What does he do? Following through. He's about to slaughter him. He gets a call from God. Don't worry, you don't have to do it. It was a test, whatever. And know right now, you are a holy person. It says in the pasuk, "Va'ata Yerushalayim." I know you search for God. So that's a great victory, right? Was that the end of the test? No. You know what happened right afterward? He goes home, and what's he greeted with? Vietnam. You come home, you're greeted with flowers. He's greeted with the news that his wife just died. Why did his wife die? Because of the Akedah. Because she heard about it. So his greatest victory right now became his biggest challenge. The challenge didn't end when he pulled his hand back with the knife. The challenge is right now. The challenge is, what are you going to do about that? How are you going to react, Avram? And Avram, what it says is, he cried. If you remember, we discussed it also 1 year, RebbeHavda.com. Small little chaf in the word. Because then we discussed that we had a daughter. But we discussed that because he didn't cry that much. Because Avram Avinu said, if I'm going to cry too much over his wife, who was his life, what I'm going to start thinking is, if only, what's the next statement? I would have told her, I would have killed him, I wouldn't have killed him, I would have taken longer, I would have sent a message. I don't know. There's a billion, if only on our days, there's a billion answers for if only. Right now, in your life, you have, if only, it's endless. Endless. But that's the mistake. The job is not to say if only. You know who made that mistake? The spies. You know what they created? A day of infamy till today. We don't have a temple. Because till today, everyone's still talking, if only. We have to switch it. How am I going to react? I'm in this position. What's my next move? Not, I shouldn't be here. If I was, what was the name of the book? If I was God. No. Not if I was God. What am I doing right now? What am I doing right now? That's what's important. And what's amazing is this. Finish up with this. The Jews in the desert were living in a bubble, a physical bubble. Clouds of glory surrounding them. Clothing expands while they're eating 9 day cheesecake. Right? Never have to wash their clothing. They don't have to cook. They don't have to eat. How they get food? Blinking. What's the name of that thing?
Hacker Genius.
Yes. Blink. Blink, and the food is there. It tastes whatever you want to taste like. They're in the bubble of all bubbles. And then they left the bubble, and now they're thinking, if only, if only, if only. Made a mistake. You know what? Every one of us was born in a bubble. Everyone in this room. You know why? Because when you came out of your mother's stomach, you know what you did? Nothing. Like the Jews in the desert. You didn't cook. You didn't clean. If you blinked and had gas come out of your mouth and your parents thought you were laughing for some reason at 2 days old with no teeth, you're still being fed. You're still being clothed. We were all at one point in the bubble. And then what happens is, as you said, we start getting a little more intelligent. And we start thinking, what if, maybe, if only, if that. When the spies turned around, their ego created the how to the if, leaving the bubble and saying, I have a better one. I have a better idea. What are we doing? We left the bubble at a certain point, and we start saying, what if? I don't know if I got the right parents. At one point, your parents were your bubble. But now we're what if? If only. If this, so what we have to do now is, we have to work our brain cells very hard, and switch everything. Rabbi Yashiv, want to tell you an amazing story? We're going to end with this story. Rabbi Yashiv, the great rabbi, thought if we spoke about him a few years ago, he was about 90-something years old. He went to a doctor, and they told him he needed to eat certain types of foods. whatever it was, less sugar, more carbs, whatever it is. Someone wrote the story down. Rabbi Yashar was a really older person, a man who spent his whole life serving God, learning the whole day, producing amazing stuff. So the doctor told him, listen, tell me what foods you like, and I'll have a nutritionist come in and work it out, right? Because we got to work out the numbers. So we got to make a chart to go to a nutritionist, and we'll weigh it on Weight Watchers. We'll figure out what do you like. And Rabbi Yashar told the guy, whatever you say. Told doctor, whatever you say. He said, what do you want? Whatever is healthy, I'm going to eat. If it's not healthy, you make the menu. He goes, no, but what do you want? I have no likes. My like is what God wants me to do. What you tell me to eat is what God wants me to do. I said, oh, doctor, I have no, well, if only this. No. My reaction. God said, now I should eat certain foods. I eat certain foods. There's no what I'm going to do. Whatever my reaction is, how am I going to react to this? Our goal right now, Eliezer, we got 3 days. We change our mindset. Very difficult change in 3 days. We change from what we think about most of the time, if only, what if, to how? And we celebrate in Jerusalem on Sunday.